it is great to have so many younger people here and so many younger poets, as well as people who have shaped the poetry of others here for many years. And our first reader tonight is Noor Abdelghany. Yes. Hi.
Announce the basket's going to be floating around here to put money in.
Okay. I'm not really a poet, but I snuck myself in here. This is a section of a piece titled The Prince of Poets. Bella, a middle-aged curator at the Museum of the Prince of Poets, once said to me, "You must never settle for a marriage of the body. Marry for the soul. Fall in love. Let yourself be loved. Love someone who will die saying, 'I have loved Bella.' And let that be his biggest accomplishment." My mother made cakes for every event. On Memorial Day, we had blue and white icing on red velvet. For Halloween, she wove a spider web from the center of an 8-inch round. Then there was All Saints' Day and All Souls' Day, the feast of the Virgin of Guadalupe. There was always a cake in the oven, one left in the fridge, and one half-eaten in the garbage. My father put his arms around her when she cracked eggs and kissed the back of her neck. For their anniversary, she stacked layers on top of each other for every year they spent together. My mother mixed the words she could not say into the batter and let them rise. "This is how you press a cake," she told me, pushing her fingers over a tea cloth and letting the steam come out of an almond torte the day my grandmother died. When he was young, my father fell in love. The woman he intended on spending his life with died after a long battle with disease. Grief-struck and frantic, he fell in the snow a week later and broke 3 ribs. My mother was a patient carer at the hospital. She listened to his story. She tried to say she was really sorry, but he would not let her. He told her never to say sorry for something she did not do. 3 years later, he married her because it was time to move on. They had me because he had to put the past behind him. They named me Bella after his love, and in an attempt to bring the past forward. At night, I looked at myself in the mirror and wondered if my eyes looked tired, if my skin was jaundiced, if fate would recycle itself through me. My mother made honey apple cakes on Christmas, but did not eat them. She made candy canes out of chocolate and placed them in our stockings. In the garage, my father chopped wood and made frames encased in glass. He stacked them in the corner until they reached the ceiling, and then he started another column. When the sun came in through the window, the garage looked like New York City or Chicago or Seattle, towers of glass around him, and my father in the center, short and stubby, hair receding away from his forehead, enclosed in a fort. He did not put pictures inside them. There were periods of times when he vanished under his skin. Days would go by without him talking. His silence made him ghost-like. He went to work and came home and sat himself in the garage. These were the periods when my mother created wells to pour herself into. She measured ingredients more accurately then, followed recipes word by word, counted her ounces like beads on a rosary. My father was an altar of sadness and strength. My mother was a fortress of patience. She waited. When they caught me smoking at 16, my mother baked a tray of brownies and left it in the oven until it burned to ash. She did not seem to be concerned with the loss. Ready to talk, she sat on my bed and said, "Bella," like she was asking permission to use my name. "This is not about being disobedient. This is not about us trying to control you. This is about your father." I walked down to the garage, and he was inside his fort listening to music. The woodcutter sprayed splints and powder. His hands and goggles were covered in white ash-like dust. Outside the house, my father was an insurance salesman. Inside the fort, he was an architect, a man who could build civilizations and rearrange time. He turned the machine off with the flick of a button and pulled a chair close to him. "Sit," he commanded. My father, who had let me have my name, never called me by it. He pulled out a box from under his workbench. In it were pictures of Isabel. She had bright blue eyes like the surface of the sea and soft golden hair that went down to her shoulders in layers. He held them in his hand, cupping them like a newborn, and flipped through them gently. I took one a day, he said. I watched as she grew thinner with every flip, her hair replaced with colorful knit hats and bandanas. Slowly, my father let her die in his hands like a bird. I slept with married men and never thought of them as cheaters. I slept with men who were truly in love with their wife. I slept with recent widowers, and men who have been walked out on, have been carved out and hollowed and cannot hold their heads up. And I vanished into the identities they gave me. I became whoever they needed me to be. Once, I slept with a man whose wife was a sergeant deployed for a year. There were medals hanging on the bedroom wall, a folded flag in a glass case over the dresser. He sat on the edge of the bed, regret forming in the center of his face and spreading to the corners like a spider web. He offered me a cigarette, and I refused it. I said, "Tell me about her." He said, "We don't need to talk about her." I said, "I want to hear about her." I moved to a big city. On the phone, my father still called me princess. My mother told me to be careful. I could hear the woodcutter, smell the dough, feel it rising in the quietness of the night. I wanted to prod it with my finger and let the air loose. The curator in the museum of the Prince of Poets was slightly overweight, and his sideburns were thick and dark and damp with sweat. "The AC is broken," he said. "My apologies." There was no one else in the mansion. He took my donation and led me up the steps. Here, he pointed, is where the prince met with his friends and colleagues at a time when true art was appreciated. Here is where he slept. This is the bed he died on. Here are some of his manuscripts. There was a napkin pinned to the wall. On it were the words, "Love returned like an obedient wife." I stepped in front of it. I looked closely. "Bella," the curator said. "Bella," he breathed out. "Do you mind if I borrow it?" he asked. "Borrow what?" "Your name. I want to use it freely." "Bella," he said again, "I will give it back soon." I said, "Thank you." He said, "You are a rare beauty." And I said, "Thank you." He said, "I am a poet as well. And when I saw you walk in today, I knew that you were an artist." "I'm not," I told him. He smiled. "Then you are art itself." I said, "Thank you." He was sweating through his shirt. The ceiling fan circulated above our heads slowly. "You are a phoenix," he said. "You've come from far away." I did not move away. He did not touch me. "Fall in love," he said. "Let a man die saying, 'I have loved Bella,' and let that be his biggest accomplishment." He could have touched me, but he didn't. It might have made it easier to walk away. And the next reader is David Ades.